This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. With the 4th of July coming up on Tuesday, let me just take this moment to encourage you to take some time to remember the courage of our founding fathers as they relied on God to guide them in forming a more perfect union. Maybe in the midst of the picnics and fireworks, you could take the time to read the Declaration of Independence or maybe the Constitution as a family and thank God for guiding those who stood up to the tyranny of England to give you and I the freedom to believe as we wish and express our faith in the public square. Coming up a little later in the show, we'll be hearing from Carl Zinsmeister on the terrible decision by GuideStar to use the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate group label. Also, FRC's own Travis Weber joins Tony to talk about the Center for Religious Liberty's brand new report, Hostility to Religion, the Growing Threat to Religious Liberty in the United States. But first, we're going to hear from Representative Mark Meadows of North Carolina, who joined Tony on Wednesday of this week to talk about the latest concerning the Obamacare replacement bill.
Joining us now, fresh off the House floor, is the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Congressman Mark Meadows. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you. My apologies, we were voting, and so I'm just joining you to try to give you the very latest update from the Senate on health care, and obviously it is the next 72 hours will be very key as we look at the repeal and replacement of Obamacare.
All right, well, give us the latest as you catch your breath after you ran off the House floor.
Well, I can tell you that we are making progress, contrary to some of the headlines that are out there that would say that this deal is dead. The president himself, as well as members of the administration, are engaging personally with senators. I've had conversations throughout the day, and I can honestly say that I'm optimistic that we will make two or three amendments that will not only drive down premiums but make the bill better, both for those that are concerned about pre-existing conditions and those in poverty, as well as those that believe in the free market, where we need to be driving down premiums. So really with your listeners, if they will continue to weigh in with their senators to let them know how important it is to them, but it's all about driving down premiums and making sure that pre-existing conditions are there. Senator Ted Cruz has got what I call the consumer choice amendment. If your listeners would call their senators and just ask them to support the Ted Cruz Consumer Choice Amendment, it will go a long ways to driving premiums down across the board and would be good policy. And so if there's one ask I would have, it would be that. But I am optimistic that we're going to get there, Tony.
All right, let me we had a conversation this morning, so we discussed quite a bit of this morning. I want to ask you, because this is one of the things I'm getting from some of my listeners, and it's something I was a little surprised by what you told me this morning on this, but you've been studying this thing. You've been running the numbers. You've become kind of a policy geek when it comes to the healthcare issue. And that is, you know, the opening up of the insurance pools across state lines, allowing to pull across state lines. That's not as big of a reduction in premiums as we might think.
Well, you're right. And I mean, it's something that I campaigned on, and it was really my default that I would run to. And it was, you know, I said, well, if we can just have competition across state lines, it'll draw premiums way down, but it really makes about a 1 to 2% difference. Most of the drivers of cost, some 54% of the drivers of cost, are really the regulations in Obamacare. So even if we kept the regulations of Obamacare in place and had competition across state lines, you probably wouldn't notice the difference. And so that's why Senator Rand Paul and Senator Mike Lee and Ted Cruz have been working around the clock to do those things that affect moms and dads and aunts and uncles the most, and that's about driving their premiums down so they don't have to make a choice between a mortgage payment and an insurance payment.
And part of the issue is the vehicle we're using here, reconciliation. If I'm not mistaken, the issue of state lines would probably not fit within the reconciliation measure.
You're exactly right. And part of the reconciliation instructions has just certain committees, and that competition across state lines goes into the Commerce Committee, of which it wasn't part of this tool that were there. Now, we're trying to look at really the next budget reconciliation instructions to make sure it would include that committee. So there may be a tweak that we could make to it when we look at tax reform or some of the other things. But really, right now, based on the Senate rule, it would be impossible to get it through on this repeal and replacement measure.
So, Congressman Meadows, let's talk just a few minutes about some of the other issues. A lot of our listeners are concerned about some of the things. I mean, beyond the premium, obviously, cost is the major factor. But also, there are concerns about, number one, the defunding of Planned Parenthood. Do we have the commitment that stays in? And the funding of taxpayer funding of abortion. There's some concerns about the way that measure is shaping up in the Senate.
Well, and everyone, your listeners have every right to be concerned. They need to be praying for that, those decisions. You've been a champion of that. You've made it very clear to the president, to the leader, to the speaker, that without those protections, you will not be supportive, nor a number of other pro-life groups would they be supportive. And so I can tell you Planned Parenthood is staying in. We're doing some workarounds to make sure that the life protections on any government funding does not indirectly fund abortions. I think we've got a fix there, but it's all about making sure that we have the backbone to stay with those convictions so that they don't cave at the last minute. I'm not going to vote for it if it has an initiative that doesn't protect life, and I'm not alone in that.
The president sounding pretty optimistic earlier today that a bill's going to emerge. What you said 72 hours. You think we're going to see something before the end of the week?
Well, I don't think that we will see it before the end of the week in terms of out for the public. But I do think the next 72 hours are critical because I think we'll have some agreement in principle. Either if we do, then they've still got to work the legislative text and the amendment process. But, yeah, the president is very optimistic. I share that optimism. And let me just say, anybody can knock the president that they'd like, but he has worked this harder than anybody I know and has been personally engaged around the clock to do it. So hopefully we'll see him fulfill a campaign promise he made to the American people. I believe we will.
All right, to recap here as we go out, the Cruz Amendment, you said you want people to contact their senators. State that again for us.
Yeah, it's the Cruz Consumer Choice Amendment, and it allows, what it basically does, if you have an Obamacare plan, it allows you to keep it, but it also allows you to purchase a cheaper program and still qualify for the subsidies that are in place. It will have a dramatic impact on rates. So that's, again, the Cruz Consumer Choice Amendment. If they'll just say, please support that. If they have a Republican senator, it would be critical, and their call would be very timely.
All right. Congressman Mark Meadows, as always, my friend, great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Tony. God bless you.
We encourage you to contact your senators about Ted Cruz's bill. You can find the contact info for your representatives when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to the Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at how one neutral nonprofit tracker is being anything but neutral.
The Center for Medical Progress continues to release shocking videos that expose the lies and crimes of Planned Parenthood. David Daleiden, the heroic undercover journalist behind the videos, was recently exonerated from the charges filed against him. Come to Values Voter Summit to hear from David Daleiden in person as he discusses his journey and the courage it takes to stand up for the unborn. With a new pro-life administration in place, America's primed for change. Seize the moment by attending this year's Values Voter Summit. VVS will give you the tools to inform and mobilize your community to protect the unborn and defund Planned Parenthood. Invited and confirmed speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Lash, Franklin Graham, Ollie North, Alan West, and many more. Join us at Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C., as we work together to protect the unborn, the family, and religious liberty. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org.
With a Republican president in office, we should be confident that our religious liberties are secure, right? Well, think again. As violations of religious liberty continue to occur in our military, FRC recognized the need for an updated compilation of these cases. Learn more about how our men and women in uniform are encountering difficulty in expressing their faith. Go to frc.org/danger for real stories of how our military service members are fighting for the very rights that thousands of their predecessors fought and died for on the battlefield.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Tuesday's edition of Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, Tony was joined by Carl Zinsmeister to talk about nonprofit rating group GuideStar and their use of the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate group labels. Carl is the Vice President of Publications at the Philanthropy Roundtable. Here's how Tony got things started.
Carl, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Now, you've been following this. You've written about it. What do we know with this action by GuideStar to back away from the Southern Poverty Law Center? It appears now that kind of the veil's been pulled back that GuideStar has some left-leaning tendencies.
More than some. It's actually been really pretty well exposed, and interestingly, Tony, including by lots of very liberal reporters who kind of got disgusted with them, dating back some years, who have discovered when they began to dig underneath the covers that this isn't kind of a neutral consumer report style arbiter of, you know, who's beyond the pale in American politics, which is the way they present themselves. That in fact, these are folks that have taken to alarming Americans as a really great way to raise money. The Southern Poverty Law Center is just a cash collecting machine. They collected $50 million in contributions in the latest year. And the way they do this, basically, is by alarming people. They make very strong claims that lump together true, you know, ugly groups of, you know, KKK and various kinds of skinheads and, you know, truly disturbing individuals, which are very, very small in number in most cases, by the way. In many cases, don't even have an office, don't have a website, don't have any money. These are just crazies. And they are grouping and lumping those kinds of groups with very, very mainstream conservative groups, religious groups, groups that are concerned about immigration trends, that sort of thing. And in the process, they're really slandering and sullying big portions of American citizens generally.
The thing I find most disturbing, Carl, and I think everybody has a right to say whatever they want to say within bounds, although, you know, as a result of them putting our organization on the hate map, we had a gunman come in and start shooting the place up. That was his own words. I mean, that was his testimony as he was being interrogated by the FBI. But the Southern Poverty Law Center wants to be this this referee, basically saying this person's viable, this person is not, this person should be able to speak, this one should not. But at the same time, they're participants. I mean, they've been pushing radical leftist policies, and the people who oppose them, they label them with a hate group label. And probably the most obnoxious example of this was in Minnesota, where a parents group was opposing the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they labeled them a hate group. I mean, how does that work in American democracy?
You know, they say that they want to be a reference group, but they really don't. They don't even make a pretense of it once you get beneath the surface. When I was doing my research for my story for Philanthropy Magazine, I found a YouTube where the main researcher, an individual who puts together the hate list, a guy named Mark Potok, was videotaped on camera saying exactly this, quote, "Sometimes the press will describe us as monitoring hate crimes and so on. I want to say that our aim in life is to destroy these groups, to completely destroy them." And again, this is not just crazy. This is very mainstream groups, some of which have literally millions of members, some of which have thousands of attorneys working for them, some of them, like your group, which have, you know, tens of thousands of middle American supporters. And it's really a serious thing when you do this, when you start trying to criminalize your philosophical opponents. I mean, as you just said, Tony,
right.
It's very fair to disagree with someone, but it's not right, and it's very un-American to bully and intimidate people by trying to criminalize someone who has a different point of view.
So, Carl, when you have somebody like GuideStar, which is supposed to be this, they're the largest entity that goes through and looks at the tax data and puts a rating on these nonprofits, to guide donors and how they give money. This whole episode would suggest very strongly that GuideStar could very well be in cahoots with the left, SPLC, in trying to choke off revenue going to groups that oppose the left.
Well, let's just remind our readers who are just getting so much bad news these days that their end result here was good. The GuideStar tried this for a month or two, and there was a big backlash, and people like our group and your group went to them and reasoned with them and said, this isn't fair, this isn't safe, this is going to foment violence rather than discourage violence. And the GuideStar finally did back down. So they've said they're going to take these labels off. So that's a good result, and we're happy about it. But you're quite right, Tony. It's worrying that a group that, again, presents itself as kind of a good housekeeping seal of approval type of organization ever fell for this in the first place. You don't have to dig very far to find out that, for instance, their own hometown newspaper, the Montgomery Advertiser, which is the newspaper where the Southern Poverty Law Center is based down in Alabama, they did some investigation, and they were just shocked at what a sham and fraud the group is. The managing editor there pointed out in a Harvard speech that this group has never spent more than 31% of its money that it raises on real programs. It's not what it says it is, which is a litigation outfit that protects people's rights in court.
Yeah.
That's the shell game. That's the pretense. But what it really is a propaganda operation.
Carl, we got to leave it there. Up against a break. Thanks so much for joining us. Great to talk with you.
My pleasure.
You can find out more about Carl and the Philanthropy Roundtable when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, a new report is out on the increasing hostility toward Christians here in the United States.
What does a children's playground have to do with the Supreme Court? A lot. In April 2017, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case of religious discrimination against Missouri's Trinity Lutheran Church. Trinity has an adjacent playground that needed refurbishing, so the staff applied for a Missouri grant program. In an odd twist, state officials denied Trinity's request. When the church asked why, they were told the state constitution barred the public treasury from aiding any church, section, or denomination of religion. That hardly seemed fair to the church, whose children at the daycare and preschool need just as much outdoor padding as other school children. This is just one of hundreds of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the United States, and FRC is at the forefront of the movement to preserve, protect, and defend religious liberty. In a newly updated publication, we catalog the growing threat to religious liberty with a comprehensive report of documented accounts of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the last 17 years. Go to frc.org/hostility for this exclusive publication.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. This past week, Family Research Council released a brand new report called Hostility to Religion, the Growing Threat to Religious Liberty in the United States. Travis Weber, who is the director of the Center for Religious Liberty, joined Tony to discuss their findings.
Travis, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. What's your first take on this report once you got it all compiled?
Yeah, I think my first take, and this is our report right here, is the noticeable increase in incidents dealing with the topic of sexuality, whether same-sex marriage or beliefs about sex and biological sex and implicating bathrooms and the like. The increase in those incidents is more significant than the increase overall. And we continue to face issues that we've traditionally faced, like a militant atheist trying to target public religious expression. But a lot of these incidents deal with the topic of sexuality, and that's where we saw the biggest increase.
So goes back, I mean, tracking this since the court's redefinition of marriage, is that when we see a real uptick?
The court's redefinition of marriage, the constitutionalization of same-sex marriage in Obergefell, is a real big marker. And certainly there was momentum before that, but once that decision came down, you saw people latching onto it, motivated by it, and saying this legitimizes what we're doing, which resulted in more religious freedom problems.
But we were told that same-sex marriage would not affect people.
Well, right. We were told that it was supposed to not affect people, but you look at what's happening. You have not just now the licenses demanded, but we need to force everyone to issue the licenses. People are opposing the exemption of clerics from issuing licenses on religious grounds. They're forcing religious schools and nonprofits to be a part of these problems, these issues, and even going after churches in some instances, which we document in the report. So, this is an ongoing trend that we're going to have to continue to monitor.
So, folks, you can actually you can download a copy of this. Go to TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over just out today. So it's actually still being published, but you can download a PDF copy of this. Now, not all of these are government-driven, but the I would say the lion's share is at the hands of government.
Right. A lot of these are at the hands of government. And what we do is we break it down into four sections. The first one deals with the targeting of crosses and public indicators of religion. The second deals with school issues. The third is expressions of sexuality in the public square. The first two, you're going to have government involved. The third section, you have cases like that of Brendan Eich, who was hounded out of his job at Mozilla because he expressed support for traditional marriage. And so there's a lot of those instances in the third section. The fourth, again, we come back to the government involvement, the use of non-discrimination laws against a number of entities. So you have a lot of government involvement, but we want to monitor the cultural developments too, because the way a culture and the media treat people with these beliefs matters just the same.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Travis Weber, my guest. He is the director of our Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. This is a compilation, so it has the information from the first edition, and you've added to it in the second edition.
That's correct. And edition, we have gone back. There are even instances that were before the first edition, but we added it in to make it more comprehensive. But in terms of documenting what has changed, we see 69 new documented incidents since the first one. That's a 76% increase. So pretty significant increase. And the increase in the area of sexuality is 114%. So a bigger surge in that section. This report is designed to be more comprehensive than the first one. So we do want folks to go to the website and avail themselves of this resource.
But you wouldn't, this is not all inclusive, because there are some cases that you may not be aware of that are out there that are not in.
Exactly. This is a conservative estimate. For instance, I document the federal government's religious freedom violation with respect to businesses and the HHS mandate and the nonprofits. There are hundreds, over 100 entities that were involved in massive litigation. Those are only counted as two instances in the report, though. So we're being conservative with how we estimate this, but no doubt the problem is much bigger.
So, I know that the liberals used to accuse President Bush, first Bush, of trickle-down economics in his economic policy. But I think what we've seen in Obama with his radical social policy is it's trickle-down. It's gone down to the lowest levels of society, and we see this hostility toward religion.
Yeah, and this is furthered by interlocking entities. When the administration takes a position, the media then goes and repeats it and acts as though, something which is quite a normal belief, they act as though it's unheard of and somehow really outside the mainstream, when many people across the country hold beliefs that they held for years. They're just trying to live their lives in peace, and they want to be, really just seek to do that. And they're not seeking controversy yet. They're the ones being targeted for lawsuits with the involvement of government often and involved in these issues, when in reality, a lot of these folks, the small business owners in the wedding industry, they're just trying to live their lives and get along with everyone.
Alarming that we're seeing such a significant increase, but there's actually some good news in this. I guess I'm kind of an eternal optimist, but when I look through here, what struck me and encouraged me was the fact that there are these cases. People aren't scattering. They're standing up for their religious freedom, and this is really what encourages me, is so many of them are young people, college age, high school age, that are saying, you know what, I have rights, I have freedoms, and I'm going to exercise my religious freedom.
Absolutely. This is a noticeable point when we look at what we have documented here. We have the, you know, the two young women who testified in their teens, testified in support of natural marriage and stood there and testified despite the vilification they received for that. A number of college students, those seeking recognition for their clubs and having to fight administration, college administrations that are hostile to them. The student who was told to stomp on Jesus by his professor and he refused, and his case became noticeable and became public, and that inspires others. This is important to note because this is not something that is under the purview of just one generation, but it's something that a number of people of different generations, different ages, standing for the freedom to live out our faith publicly. You know, so we can take encouragement in that. And part of the reason for this is to let people know what's going on so they can be encouraged when they read this, right, and then stand with those who are facing hostility.
Right. I mean, obviously, we want to end the hostilities toward religious freedom, but we also want you to know that you're not alone.
Exactly. And as people learn these trends and learn about how concerning they are, they can then take action in response. You know, part of the problem is a lot of people say, well, I don't really see the problem because it hasn't affected them yet. Well, this shows them a trend that maybe it hasn't come to their door yet, but if that trend continues, it will. We should stop that before it happens.
Absolutely. And that's what this is about, stopping it. We have a window of opportunity, I believe, in this administration to dial back some of these attacks on religious freedom.
Absolutely, Tony. You know, and this is, we want to also remember, this is an encouragement to us here at home, but just like, we can be encouraged from those around the world facing hostility. This focuses on the United States, but it's something to remember to stand with all those facing persecution around the world, because we're all just seeking to live out our faith in public.
Absolutely. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us. Great work on the hostility report.
Thank you, Tony.
You can read our report when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to tonyperkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.